Big news! Wayfair's Black Friday sale is here. Right now, score up to 80% off everything home. These are our best deals of the year. Shop Wayfair's Black Friday sale now at Wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Moncrief on News Talk.
Is Ireland on the right track when it comes to dealing with climate change? I'm joined now by Dr. Tygo Mani, Assistant Professor of Environmental Policy at UCD, who believes that Ireland is getting it all wrong in our response to climate change, a response which Tyg has called erratic. Hi Tyg, how are you?
Good afternoon.
Erratic is a word, is a strong word. Why are you using that word in particular?
Should I admit that it was actually the editor who used that word? But I would think that you could say that we've made some improvements in some areas, but in general, I think we have gotten it wrong.
Okay.
We're not going in the right direction. You can clearly see it at greenhouse gas emissions projections, the conclusions of the Climate Council. We are a long way off where we need to be getting in terms of our legal obligations, in terms of deep reductions in emissions.
Okay. Transport is an issue. We were talking about it off air there, even with this, you know, these new bus routes, these 24-hour bus routes. You think we still don't have the infrastructure put into public transport?
I would say yes. I'd say we've been overly focused on improving things, so making things more efficient. So say, for example, EVs, they are useful, but they are not sufficient on their own. Really, the solution needs to lie strongly in changing spatial planning, so you may have more compact developments and avoiding urban sprawl. And also in terms of modal shift, so active transport, walking, cycling, and public transport, which we have underinvested in over decades in Ireland.
So you think even with the advances that we're making, is it a bit too little, too late when you hear about the metro and the Finglas, and as I previously mentioned, these 24-hour buses, is it not enough? What else could we be doing? Does it need to be more radical?
I think, yes. I think we need to be putting in place studies that allow us to look deeper and wider. I think we need to be reconsidering our policy to say that, for example, the National Planning Framework means that we reduce the rate of sprawl. We get slightly less worse at a slightly slower, but we still worsen. We need to stop urban sprawl. We need to look at repairing what's there. We need to look at how we have vibrant towns and villages that people want to live in, where they're serviced, where they can access sites at a relatively cheap level, rather than having to ask their auntie or their uncle or their parents out in the countryside that they need a cheap site because that's the only way to get a house. Active transport, we pushed forward, particularly and probably under the last government. We've seen that that's really, really important, walking and cycling. I would say the public transport plans are insufficient. We do not have enough studies to actually show us what we can really do in terms of a radical change. We've gone for car-based design, car dependence. It is damaging in terms of air pollution, road traffic accidents. It is really damaging in terms of congestion and for our economy. We don't have enough knowledge at the moment, actually, of specific Ireland-based studies of what we can do really radically differently to say, what would Ireland look like if it wasn't car-based, if it wasn't dominated by cars? What would it look like if it was actually dominated again, like it was only 30, 40 years ago, by public transport and by active transport?
Okay, so you're saying even with these funded advancements and incentives we've had, particularly around electric cars, it's kind of not enough. It's actually the wrong approach, in your opinion.
I would say it's not the wrong approach, as in we still need to do that, because you're still going to have cars no matter what scenario we have in the future. But to rely on that as the main measure is not a sensible way of actually planning for what you're going to do in terms of the mobility of your population or freight.
A car is often the easier option, though, isn't it? Like, even I'd say that myself. Like, I would be a huge advocate for sustainability in other areas, and I find I really fall down with the driving because I just find my public transport links aren't reliable enough. Mm-hmm. Other places are just, it's too, you know, it would take me hours to get somewhere. The car journey, like, that's really difficult for people to contend with, I think.
It is. And this is where you don't want to be blaming people for these problems. These are systemic problems. Obviously, people can make some changes in terms of their behaviour. But if your system is already pushing you towards sprawling out longer distances and then an inadequate active and public transport provision, well, then it's very difficult to actually really change what you're going to do beyond just doing electric vehicle.
Yeah.
So we need to be looking at those systems much more seriously. We're going the wrong direction in terms of greenhouse gas emissions. We're not going to meet our targets, our emission ceilings over from 2025 to 2030. We're nowhere near on the right track in terms of out to 2050. And that's transport, that's also agriculture. We're not really grasping the nettle on this, but I'd actually flip that and say we're missing all the opportunities, all the win-wins you can get out of a strong, robust response that looks across different systems, looks across a more complex way, but it is a way of actually looking at you can improve many things by going for a transformational approach, by using systems thinking.
So how else then could we change our agriculture policies? Well, you've brought that up. What are we getting wrong there?
Our agriculture... Farmers are really angry about this, and I can understand it. They're being pushed in two different directions. Our environmental policy says we must reduce emissions. It's really, really important. There are other parts of the system that really dictate what goes on are actually pushing to expand production. Trade missions to Africa and to China about pushing dairy and livestock production, about pushing meat. That's not, to base your diet off that is not good for public health. It's not good for greenhouse gas emissions. It's not good for water pollution. It's also not good for biodiversity. But to blame farmers for this is not the right approach, because we need to set up the system. So not pushing agricultural development policy and rural development policy around increases in livestock agriculture. Any scenario into the future is, of course, still going to have those. But just pushing livestock production to export them is not a sensible policy. If you really want to feed the world, you increase your tillage, you increase your cereal production, you increase your fruits, you increase your vegetables. That's how you have healthy diets. That's how you feed the world, not through something that is quite an inefficient way of using land. Mm. And then blaming farmers for the poor environmental performance, where it's actually really difficult to reduce emissions once you've pushed down that pathway in the first place.
So should we not be subsidising farmers anymore? Is that the problem?
We should be. Absolutely subsidise farmers. We subsidise farmers to produce healthy food, to have secure livelihoods, to protect nature and to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. And that would not involve pushing livestock agriculture as the approach and then just tag on some efficiency measures afterwards. It puts farmers in an impossible position. More than 50% of farms are not economically viable. It's enriching agribusiness. It's not providing a viable future livelihood for farmers or a viable future for rural Ireland.
What's your take on carbon taxes then? We do pay them. Is that enough?
I would say no. I would say they are potentially a very good measure. They can help to incentivize an action, but they are, again, they're not enough on their own. You need to be designing systems to actually reduce emissions. And we're giving, again, the examples from transport and or agriculture, that your overall development policy is towards low emissions outcomes and outcomes that give you lots of win-wins, the outcomes that improve other policy objectives. And not just going, we're just going to continue on this pathway we've had for the last few decades and then try and get a carbon tax to do it, where, again, we're blaming individuals. Mm. Absolutely use a carbon tax, but only if you've put in place the systemic measures as well to set yourself on a path for low emissions outcomes and all the other benefits that can come through in terms of public health, water pollution, air pollution and economic activity and livelihoods.
You're very clear that you want state action rather than individual action, but could you not argue that accountability would start with individuals as well?
I would say in terms of politics, yes, who you vote for, the electorate, but I would say often what we've said is we need to change individual behaviour on this. Individual behaviour can only get you so far if the systems are pointing you in the wrong direction. So I would say not to blame individuals on this, and also not to blame farmers, to set up systems. And it needs to be led by the state, because the state needs to put in place the vision. It needs to guide through governance, to guide the market, to guide civil society, towards actually how you can reduce emissions across systems. And this needs to be guided by the state, by the analysis, by the vision and by the measures in place to actually encourage that, and not where two different government departments with two different but related functions are pushing you in two different directions.
There surely is a political will for change, though, when you're seeing pledges made at COP30 and stuff like that.
There absolutely is. But I think, and the Climate Council has said this also, you need to move beyond those statements of good intentions to statements that are credible in terms of seriously reducing greenhouse gas emissions and moving us forward to a brighter future in terms of well-being, in terms of our livelihoods. We're not there at the moment. Our policy is typically framed around efficiency, around using technology to try and clean something up rather than avoiding it in the first place.
Yeah. One texter says here, aviation has zero fuel tax, zero reduction in emissions, zero accountability, while the rest of us pay the price. What can be done there?
It is related to the Chicago Convention, so that's an international convention. It's difficult to address, but difficult doesn't mean you shouldn't do it. We shouldn't advocate for addressing this. A lot of aviation is used by the richest part of the population, not by the poorer part. So acting on this, that is one place you can put in. You can put in, you know, taxes on tickets. You can, maybe they can be stepped in. So it's people who fly regularly actually pay for them. But it's what aviation is one of those sectors that has gotten off very, very lightly by doing a lot of lobbying and having this this burden or this opportunity from legislation, that old legislation that's not working for us anymore, that we won't actually try and change what happens with aviation in general.
Another text here, TriCare, roadworks to build 500 metres of cycle lane that is about 3 kilometres outside of town. No cyclists or walkers anywhere near. A waste. Another, a similar text with someone from Portlaoise about a cycle lane that's never used, cost millions. There's a real, we're struggling with the attitudes around cycling, but then it feeds into the issue around infrastructure. But then you have people texting and complaining about said infrastructure. Like, that's very hard. I mean, what's the solution there?
You absolutely have to have a long-term view. If you're saying that that's not being used much at the moment, I'd say that's not really getting the whole picture. You have to see that, you have to take an approach of build it and they will come. Mm. You need to set these systems up. Of course, you then need to consider, well, where is a sensible place to put it and where is less so? So you need to prioritise it. But you just focus on one and say, well, it's not being used. Well, I would like to see the data on those and say, well, at what times of the day is it not used? Is it that it's not used between 10 and 12 in the morning when actually people are at school, they're at college, they're at work? Or is it that it's not used at all? But in general, you need to be building this kind of infrastructure so people can see it, that it becomes normalised and that they have an accessible network that can say, I can be safe on the road to go out and use my bike.
Dr. Tagomani, thank you so much for that and for joining us in studio today. Loads of reaction here, as mentioned. I once got a bus that was due at 9:40 p.m. and it was 40 minutes late. That is just not good enough. And lots of similar sentiments shared across texts. I get it. I've been there. The ghost bus, the unreliability. It is very difficult. It's very difficult.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.
Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2 times the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.